Main menu.
Welcome to ACB Radio Mainstream's regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. This is Main Menu. Coming up on Main Menu this week...
So we've added a new feature called Suspicious Regions, which is in the Recognition Settings dialog. And when you choose to ignore suspicious regions, we will analyze the recognition results of the page. And if we see that kind of thing happen, we will instruct the OCR to recognize the page again, this time leaving out those regions that we think are likely to be wrong.
We speak with Stephen Baum from Kurzweil, who tells us what's new in K1000 version 10. I'm Dave Williams, you're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. And joining us once again on the programme, welcome back to Stephen Baum from Kurzweil Educational Systems. Hi Stephen, thanks for coming back on to Main Menu.
And, my pleasure, it's good to speak to you again.
Not a problem, and we appreciate you're very busy and you giving up your time. We understand there's a new release of the K1000 software, so I thought it might be a good idea to invite you onto the program to perhaps tell listeners what's new, what that new release is, how they get it, and all that good stuff. So what are the key differences between the previous version, version 9, and the most recent version there, version 10?
Okay, I'll go over just, you know, a handful of things rather quickly. One difference has to do with DAISY file creation. DAISY, for probably most of your listeners know what DAISY is at this point. The acronym actually stands for Digital Accessible Information System, which somehow I find non-memorable and have to look up every time I say it.
I think most people, when they think DAISY, they kind of equate it to digital talking books, essentially. This is what we're talking
about.
Yeah.
Right. And in version 9, we added a feature that allowed us to save a DAISY book. But what we were saving was the NISO DAISY format, which is also referred to as version 3.03. And we were saving a text-only document. One of the things that gets confusing about DAISY is if you have a DAISY player and you have a DAISY document, you have a fairly good chance of not being able to play the document on the DAISY player because there are a lot of different types of DAISY. There are two different standards, 3 and 2, and further, there are 6 types of DAISY documents within either of those versions. What we added in the current release is the ability to save a audio DAISY version 2 document. And we did this primarily so that you could play those documents on portable DAISY players, of which there's a number on the market today.
So this
the
just
we had introduced the ability to write DAISY in version 9, we quickly had customers calling asking why they couldn't play that document. Now they can, so we now allow them to save that. And essentially, that kind of DAISY document is a collection of MP3 files with enough navigation information to allow a DAISY player to move from one section to another, provided that you have bookmarked the document in advance. You do that bookmarking in the Kurzweil 1000. We've always had, or not always, but we've had the ability to read tables and recognize the existence of tables, I think since about version 4 or 5, but this is the first version where we allow people to modify the structure of a table. So they can create a table with a set number of lines and rows and columns. They can add, insert rows, insert columns, delete rows, delete columns, and do pretty much anything else that one would expect to be able to do for a table. Further, they can, We've also overhauled the way in which we do reading of tables, and so there's a lot of new shortcut keys to, for example, read the topmost cell of a table when you're at a particular cell in the table, or a left cell or a right cell, or et cetera, to read left to right, read top to bottom, various other things for tables.
Okay. Yeah, there was something about the DAISY that I wanted to ask you, because DAISY to some extent has been sold to us as being the solution to all our all our digital book problems, in the sense that here we are in the 21st century. There's this new technology, DAISY, that allows us to synchronize text and audio. It provides advanced navigation, fantastic for students and that sort of thing. Do you think that perhaps these multiple standards and substandards and so on are just muddying the waters, perhaps?
Well, I think it there is the risk of that, and at the same time, I don't know what alternative the DAISY Consortium has, the people who are building these standards. They were trying to make a format that was quite flexible and could meet a number of different types of people's needs, and they also want a living standard which adapts over time to new ideas and new principles. So, for example, right now you can't really very effectively navigate through mathematical symbols in a DAISY book, and it would be really nice to add things to that, and there are people working on extending DAISY for MathML to make that possible. But the more flexible you make a standard and the more changeable you make a standard, the more you run the risk of having incompatibilities between the different people making the documents and the people who make the readers of the documents. And I think we're seeing a fair amount of that. It's still early in the process, and I expect DAISY to do very good things over time, but it is something that people have to be patient with. Like most international standards organizations, it doesn't move as swiftly as we might all like.
In the new version 10, if a user wishes to create a DAISY version of the book that they've scanned in, can you perhaps run us through that process? If I have a Victor Classic or one of the popular DAISY players, and I want to play this latest paperback that I've just scanned in on that, what's the procedure? What's the process what are the steps that I as a user would need to take to go through and make that happen?
With the document open inside of the Kurzweil 1000, you would use the File Utilities Create Audio File menu item. That brings up a dialog, and in that dialog you would select as your format DAISY with MP3 files, or if you'd like, DAISY with WAV files. It will support either. And you also would specify a folder that you wish to place that DAISY document into. You do that, hit enter after about 15, depending on the system and the size of the book, a 10-second pause, let's say. You'll be back in the product, but your computer will be chugging away quite aggressively in the background. You'll still be able to use the product and do other things, but in the background you are creating the DAISY document. And that takes a considerable amount of computer power because we're sending all of the text through a text-to-speech engine. It's being rendered into a WAV file, converted into an MP3 file. So there's a lot going on in the background. You can use the audio spooler monitor, which is another feature under File Utilities, to pay attention to that process if you'd like. Sooner or later, it will end, at which point it's up to you to move those files. Well, typically for the case of, you mentioned Victor Reader, you would presumably burn them onto a CD drive or a CD. That burning process is not something that we support directly, and we've talked about doing that sometime in the future, but the standards for different CD writers tend to make it rather difficult to write that kind of software. So we have not done that at this point. You're kind of on your own in getting the book from the folder on your hard drive into a CD-ROM. But once you get it onto a CD-ROM, you would pop that CD-ROM out of your PC, put it into the Victor player, and you're good to go.
Okay, that sounds relatively straightforward. So a user would obviously have to use their own CD mastering software to create the CD title itself. And of course, there are other Daisy players available, not just the CD type. There are software packages for Windows that will play Daisy titles. I believe the BrailleNote family of products has improved support now for Daisy. So people will certainly have a few options.
I should add that many of those would also be able to play text Daisy, which is easier in the 1000 because it's just a file save. File save, select a format of Daisy, and you're done. Because there you're not creating audio files, so it takes much less time.
You talked about the process for creating the Daisy book and that the text is sent through a text-to-speech engine and then the WAV files are created. Do people have the choice in terms of the text-to-speech engine? Is it the same? Do they have the same options as they would have as though they were reading the book in Kurzweil itself?
Exactly the same options, because we use the reading settings dialogue to determine what speech engine to use, what speed, how to handle emphasized text, how to pronounce particular words. All the usual options apply there.
Okay, and the second thing you mentioned there in terms of what's new in the version 10 was this improved table support, was that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was... optical character recognition, which of course is the technology we use to convert an image into text, has had the ability to identify tables for some time, but doesn't always do it perfectly by any means. And so you would sometimes find two different rows in a table jammed together as one row, or two columns jammed together as one column, or something that isn't a table at all, recognized as a table, and now you have the ways to edit the structure of that table and fix those problems. So that's one reason to do it. Another reason is just so you can create tables of your own. And I might add, if you create a table in the Kurzweil 1000 and then export it as an Excel document and bring it into Excel, it works quite nicely. And vice versa. You can take an Excel spreadsheet and read it inside of the Kurzweil 1000 as a table. It won't be a live, active spreadsheet. It won't update information as it goes along, but it can be a handy way to get access to Excel. As always, you know, what centrally we are there to do is provide access to hard copy material. And so we'll tend to try to do things that improve recognition or improve scanning over time. And what we have here is nothing dramatic in terms of the OCR engines themselves. We have a new release of FineReader, but it's basically a bug fix release. And we have a new release of ScanSoft's OCR engines as well. We're up to version 12.6 there. Those two are basically just a bug fix release. And to forestall any questions, you may have heard that ScanSoft has released version, I think, 15 of OmniPage very recently. We do not get access to that version 15 until they develop what they call a capture development toolkit for it. And we're told that that won't happen until early next year. So we won't get 15 for a while. But when we do, we'll certainly get it into the product as soon as we can. The other thing we did for OCR, though, that's actually pretty exciting, is that one problem with FineReader, particularly when one is scanning, say, a thick book, is that you often get stray characters that are recognized that are along the outside edge of the page. And they will be tildes, commas, question marks, exclamation points, I's, L's. And what they really represent is the OCR's attempt to recognize the broken sort of shadow that is along the edge of the page. And what is really being seen by the scanner there is actually the shadow of the other pages of the book. Those often, particularly when you're using Fine Reader, are recognized incorrectly as characters, and they really mess up the reading of a page. So we've added a new feature called Suspicious Regions, which is in the Recognition Settings dialog. And when you choose to ignore suspicious regions, we will analyze the recognition results of a page. And if we see that kind of thing happen, we will instruct the OCR to recognize the page again, this time leaving out those regions that we think are likely to be wrong. And this has a really pretty dramatic effect when you're using Fine Reader with books. So it's a significant improvement in terms of OCR for that. The other thing we've done is completely overhauled the poorly recognized pages dialog, which is a tool in the Kurzweil 1000, uniquely in the Kurzweil 1000, that allows people who are trying to correct a document to sort of triage and correct those pages that they think are in the worst shape, or I should say that the Kurzweil 1000 thinks is in the worst shape. And we've added a number of improvements to that particular dialog to make that easier to do. Well, I have to say, I'm afraid you still have to push down the book really hard to get the characters near the spine. The shadow I'm talking about actually is usually on the outside border of the page.
Okay.
With the thickness of the book, which tends to cause the book to splay out as you push it down.
Right.
And so you see sort of this funny outside edge, which sometimes is very badly recognized.
Now, last time you were on the program, Stephen, we talked about a scanner, the make and model of which escapes me right now, but we talked about a scanner with a book edge. Is that still available, and would that help in addressing this problem?
It does help in addressing this problem, and on the other hand, you're now left to scanning a single page at a time. And for some people, that's a lot to lose.
Right, so it swings and roundabouts, as we say.
Right, yeah. But it is a nice scanner, and it's the Plustek Optic Book 3600. It is a scanner that I think works quite well with the product and is worth considering.
And are users taking that to heart? Are you finding many people are going for that option, or do people prefer the faster, you know, ability to scan the two pages at the same time?
There are certainly people who use and like the scanner a lot. However, if you're doing a standard black and white scan, there is no way to adjust the brightness setting, and some people consider that a real liability when they're looking at scanners. And will not choose the scanner on that basis. So I definitely have customers who use it, and it's a scanner that I think I'd love to encourage scanner manufacturers to make scanners like that, because I think they make sense. But I think in general people are still buying Epson's more than anything else.
Yeah.
And the Epson is an excellent choice.
Be nice to see Epson come along with a scanner with a book edge.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll go quickly through another few things.
Sure, please.
There is a update to the speech engine, sometimes called Voice Text, sometimes called NeoSpeech, but it still ships with the same two voices. They are improved in quality. It's a fairly interesting release of that engine, and that is a speech engine that quite a few people like. It's, in my experience, sort of the first natural voice speech engine that quite a few people seem to have taken to. So quite that one's.
Yeah, we always say in this program that synthetic speech is always terribly subjective, and one person's preferred synthesizer, you know, the next person may well hate. And I always think you have to take a very pro-choice line when it comes to synthetic speech. So it's great to hear that there are more options out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. We've done a fair number of things to make reading more customizable. There is now an alternate reading unit, so you can move. The reading unit is normally sentence, line, or paragraph. and you still have that, but there is an alternate reading unit that you can get at for the various keystrokes that one uses to move forward, backward, or to repeat a unit. There has been considerable work in how a speech engine changes to reflect emphasized text. Emphasized text using usually meaning underlined, bolded, or italicized. And now each speech engine each voice you use can have its own method for how to handle emphasis. There's much better speech control for different languages, so you can select a particular voice at a particular volume, at a particular pitch and speed for, say, Spanish, and another one for German, and another one for French. There's been a fair amount of work to improve our interaction with screen readers for those people who, for example, are using Braille, refreshable Braille displays, and will tend to turn off our speech and use a screen reader instead. We've done a number of things to make that work better.
And that's for all the leading screen readers, or are there particular screen readers that work better than others? Or?
Well, that's probably true, but in general what we were targeting is the ones that are most often used in the United States, which is Window Eyes and JAWS.
Okay.
But we did some things that I think basically will improve for any screen reader. In particular, labels in dialogue boxes are now pretty much read properly, which wasn't the case before. That tended to be something that was difficult for us.
So you think, in terms of Braille support, then you think that's the way forward to allow people to use their screen reader, or to encourage people to use their screen reader rather than developing your own Braille support?
I tend to think so. I mean, I do get requests from people who would like us to develop Braille support ourselves, but then I ask what they want the Braille support to do, and it turns out to be exactly what they already get with a screen reader. And I can't imagine someone with a refreshable Braille display who doesn't have a screen reader. So although I can understand some arguments against it, I tend to think it's not something that we're going to get into very soon. Let's see, there are a lot of convenience features. The ability, for example, in almost any list of indeterminate size in any dialogue, you can now hit Control plus F to do a find in that dialogue list, or F3 to find again, or Shift F3 to search backward. There are a lot of things that were text boxes that have become combo boxes, so you can re-choose an older choice rather easily. There's been an apply button added to a lot of dialogues. There's more verbosity events. There's more shortcut keys. Oh, one thing that I think a lot of people will find useful is it's always been very difficult for us to open, say, a Microsoft Word document or to save in Microsoft Word. We do it, but we end up supporting, I think, Word 7 and 8 in old releases. And the reason is that Microsoft Word is a proprietary format. Microsoft doesn't tell people what is the content of that format or how to read or how to write it. And so it's difficult to write a conversion utility for it. Now, if you have Microsoft Word in your system, we will use Microsoft Word to actually do the conversion. So it will open rather than us. And that happens indirectly. It happens sort of under the table. You don't know it's happening. But if you are in Kurzweil 1000 and open a Word document, you may find that we're actually using Word to do the open. And the same is true for saving a document.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? If the software's already on the system, why reinvent the wheel?
Exactly. And if anyone can open and save a Word document, you would think Microsoft Word would be the best choice.
But then, obviously, that does present the problem that somebody who doesn't have Word installed is, to some extent, they're not going to be able to read Word documents, are they?
Well, for them, they can still use Word documents using the conversion approaches that we've had in previous releases, because those approaches are still there.
Right.
And if you don't have Word, we will automatically use those approaches instead.
And in most cases, those processes are going to be adequate.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Okay.
So there's also, let's see, there's a new merge and open function. which replaces the file append and allows you to select multiple files from a list of files, order those files as you wish, and have them open as one document. And in particular, that handles things like NLS Web Braille, which tends to provide books as five or six different files that you before might have had a difficult time merging into one document.
Last time you were on the program, we spent quite a large amount of time talking about the way in which the K1000 software now is becoming an interface to a number of web portals, Wikipedia and Web Braille and several others. Have you expanded that list at all recently? Has there been any work in that area since we last spoke?
Well, there's been work since version 9, but most of it went into version 9.01 or 02 or 03. For example, there is support for Encyclopedia Britannica in several of its versions, a few of which are free. There's a Concise Britannica, for example, that you can get access to that is free. We will also access the full Encyclopedia Britannica, but you do need a subscription with that website in order to use that feature. For Wikipedia, we have added support for Wikipedia in other languages. So there's a French version, a Spanish version, a Dutch version, a German version, and an Italian version.
You know, you want to know anything about anything, you know, and Wikipedia seems to have the answer. It's a fabulous resource, and a lot of people really like the K1000 interface.
Right. It's another reason why we made the table reading or work to improve table reading, because Wikipedia is full of tables. So it became more and more important to be able to read tables properly. So, we think Wikipedia is a great release or a great resource, and we're happy to provide access to it.
And I think, it says a lot for the way technology has come along in the last few years. If you'd thrown a page or a site like Wikipedia at a screen reader or at a blind user in 1998 or 99, it's a very busy site. It's very densely linked. There's a lot of cross-linking goes on between articles, and the K1000 interface and using popular screen reading software has really made that site, and sites like it, navigable and easy to use.
I agree. Yes. Let's see. Something else that's new is a option, and this was actually originally done with the Kurzweil 3000. But we have a separate CD that can be purchased in the United States at least for $50 plus I think $5 shipping. It contains the Concise Oxford Dictionary, the Concise Oxford Thesaurus, and two RealSpeak voices, one of which is Jane, a British English voice. The other is Jennifer, an American English voice. And so if one buys those, you find that you have new options both in terms of speech but also in terms of reference materials. So you can choose, when you look up a word, which dictionary to use and which thesaurus to use.
So that product, then, that interfaces with K1000? That's an add-on designed specifically for K1000, or could one purchase that as a standalone product and use it that way?
It'd be nice if one could, but it's not a standalone product. It works in either the Kurzweil 1000 or the Kurzweil 3000. And in fact, I don't even think it will install if you don't have one of those two products on your system.
Right. So it's a bolt-on essentially to the K1000, K3000 family, and $50 plus shipping, giving you two RealSpeak voices and the Concise Oxford Dictionary and Thesaurus.
Right. I actually should add one other point, which is I think in Great Britain you'll find it's a free part of the product. Basically, in countries where we thought British English would be more standard than American English, that that was something that you'd want.
Well, we appreciate that.
And those kind of, this for change is actually something where it's a little less expensive.
Yes, yes, very much so, yeah. Okay, I'm sure you've got more items on your list for the version 10 then. Let's try and wrap that up.
Well, let's see. We were talking about online support, and we've added just basically a few things for books and magazines. We've got a new site, which is for Bookshare.org new books. The Bookshare site has a page on its website that basically tells you what's new and exciting that they've added to the site. And we've added that as a separate site that you can look at. It's rather difficult, of course, to go through all of Bookshare's books looking for something new to read, and this gives you a way to look at the, say, top 50 things that they've added recently. So that's useful, although, again, only for U.S. citizens. We have, in addition, Bookshare.org has added, with the good graces of the National Federation of the Blind, they've added support to for online newspapers via Newsline. And we now support that in online search for magazines. So if you go into a magazine search, you can choose to read, today's New York Times, for example. So that is available. And that's a really, again, a very powerful feature, and again, unfortunately, limited to U.S. citizens. We further have added support for Voice of the Diabetic and Future Reflections, as well as the Braille Monitor, again, in online magazines. And finally, another Bookshare.org thing is that they have something called institutional accounts. And in the past, institutional accounts could not use the 1000 to get access because they have two levels of logins. They have to log in as an institution and then as a user at that institution. We now support that. So that is there as well.
So that's for institutions where perhaps the college or school or whatever it may be has perhaps bought Kurzweil for one of their machines in their library, for example. Mm-hmm. And then somebody can come along. The institution can log in, and then a authorized user can come along and log in, and that's all supported now in K1000.
Yes. There are, of course, lots of little changes, you know, and it's always, I often find it difficult to come up with which one should be talked about and which one shouldn't, because inevitably something that I think is a little change would be considered a big change by somebody. But suffice to say, I've got a list of, 20. 20 things that are in my list of additional changes.
Right. These are minor interface type things, are they? Or
yeah. For example, one of them is that you can finally hear the last system message. There is a repeat last message hotkey, which is Shift plus F2, and that will work inside of any Kurzweil application, including the calculator and fax program.
You know, it's such a simple idea, but it's one of those things that is just. Absolutely. You know, I think Torx does that. They have a hotkey to read the last and the last but one system message when you're using your, Symbian mobile phone. Right. It's such a simple idea, but it can make all the difference. You know, if you're using software speech and the phone rings or somebody interrupts you or whatever it may be, you know, and the computer babbles something, you know, and you think, what did it just say? You know, and it's gone. You know, no idea what it was. It's gone. So just a simple idea. So what's the keystroke for that, Stephen?
Shift plus F2.
Yeah. I think we're going to see that popping up in the screen readers before long. It's just such a straightforward idea, but it makes perfect common sense.
Right. We're really kind of out of shortcut keys, which is a common problem in the blindness business since they're so pervasive. It's just a lot easier for people to use a shortcut key than to go through three levels of dialog boxes and menu items to get to things. But we are running out, and it's relatively difficult. And I'm resisting doing what screen readers do, which is to add things like insert as a modifier, largely because I would like to leave those to screen readers.
It's a difficult issue, isn't it? Because you've essentially got two standard modifiers, then with the control and the alt, and then you've got the shift. And typically, yes. you wouldn't use the shift as the only modifier for a keystroke, because obviously you've got things like capitalization and punctuation and things like that where you need the shift. So you are limited in terms of the numbers of permutations. And then I know some certainly the folks at Synthevoice with Window Bridge, they use the caps lock, and I think Dolphin now also use the caps lock as a modifier. And it's a difficult one, really, because people, when they're training to, you know, when they're learning to use their computer to appreciate the difference between a toggle and a modifier, and then suddenly you tell them, well, actually, this key is both a toggle and a modifier, it can be potentially confusing. But what do you do? I don't know. Have you thought about using the Windows key, like Control Windows key, and something else? That's a standard
modifier.
You have
to be really careful about the Windows key, because of course it is a toggle reserved by the Windows operating system. It is also used by the operating system for a number of different keystrokes. So yes, it's a possibility. The other thing that we're at least thinking about is providing a mechanism where people can define or redefine hotkeys for various functions that they think are useful and important. I've always liked the way, actually, Microsoft Word did that in a really, I think, very, very well-defined kind of manner. And I would sort of like to do something similar, although it's a somewhat dangerous feature.
I guess you would need to have perhaps one hotkey that doesn't change and can't be remapped to restore the defaults.
By the way, something I added in the extras folder for this release, and I use it myself, is a small procedure to remap your caps lock key as a control key. Because the caps lock key is pressed accidentally, of course, all the time. And if, like me, you think its placement in the keyboard is really unfortunate, you can get rid of it altogether or choose to use it as another control key.
And then if you want caps lock on, then you turn that feature
then you're
off.
Out of luck. Yeah, in this approach, there's no way to have caps lock on. And there are, of course, occasions where you want it on, but nonetheless, it's just a little registry change. It's kind of a nice thing to be able to do.
Okay.
That does bring up, you know, the extras folder briefly, which is simply where I think it's useful. I just didn't want to send a CD out with a blank space on it. So in the extras folder, there's all sorts of little goodies that typically you could find on the internet if you looked. But they are there if you don't have internet access, or your internet access is slow, or you simply want to look over our collection of what we think is useful.
Those of us that have access to high-speed, you know, broadband internet access, I have a 1 megabit connection here, and I know people now with 8 megabits of download. So we take it for granted, I think, to a certain extent. But still, there are many parts of the world, and even in the United States, in some rural areas where there's no DSL or cable. So what sort of goodies are we talking about in that extras folder?
We find, by the way, that I end up taking things out of the extras folder too, and typically it's because the licensing requirements for redistributing certain things are sometimes onerous to the point that I can't provide them. For an example of that is, I think I took out, I used to have redistributed Adobe for an obvious, you know, it's kind of obvious that would be useful. And Adobe Reader was something that was in there. And this time around, I read in the license agreement something that I hadn't noticed before, which was you could not redistribute Adobe if you used Adobe components to convert a file from PDF to something else. Well, of course, we've been doing that for some time, and as a consequence, I suddenly thought it was not a good idea for us to distributed.
That's unfortunate because Adobe, I understand, have worked with this industry in the past.
If I had had the time to talk to them directly before making this release, odds are I could have included it, but they may have made an exception in my case. But I'm also aware of how long it takes large companies to make such exceptions. So I didn't have time to proceed with that.
So we may see this back in a future release.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Let's see, but I've got, you'll be pleased to know, ACB Radio Tuner is in there.
thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Various games, some of them dating back to early computer days, but nonetheless, various games that people have found useful in the past. A talking checkbook program for the blind. Who knows? It goes on and on. There are chess games. There are utilities that were written specifically here for the Kurzweil 1000. And one I should mention, it allows you to convert lots of files from one format to another using Kurzweil 1000. So, for example, if you have a folder of PDF documents and you want to convert them all to text documents, and there's quite a few of them, I have a utility called K1 Automator that's in the extras folder that allows you to set up a simple mechanism that will do that one file at a time. And you simply go away, come back, and hopefully they're all converted for you.
Can we do that at the moment with the version 10 because of the Adobe issue?
Oh, yeah. No, PDF is still very much recognized. It's recognized directly by the Kurzweil 1000 itself.
Right. I got you. So we just don't have the Adobe Reader on the disk, but people can get that any number of places anyway.
Although it's still a good idea if you have to have Adobe Reader on your system.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It will improve our ability to handle PDF files. But this would also let you do the same thing with TIFF files or, for that matter, with Word documents. Whatever you happen to have that we happen to know how to convert, you can convert using this utility.
Okay.
So that's actually a utility that we wrote that's in the extras folder. And another thing that is in the extras folder that amazes me how often people find this useful is a program that will reverse the order of all the pages in a Kurzweil document.
I have no idea why people would want to do that, but I guess they do.
Because somehow they've accidentally scanned the entire book backwards.
You think they'd check that?
And people do it.
You think you'd notice, though, when you scan the first page and it's not the first page?
Yeah, I would think people would notice, but they don't. Or maybe they do it for a section or something else.
Yeah.
So anyway, there are probably in the neighborhood of about 85 different programs or files that might be worth checking out that are in the extras folder on the CD.
These are all, freeware type things, pretty much.
I think they're typically freeware. It's a possibility we've included a few things that are actually shareware, or demoware, where you can use it for a while, but sooner or later would have to pay somebody something.
Right.
In general, they're freeware.
It's like one of those, I don't know if you remember back in the day, about 10, 15 years ago, you used to be able to buy CD-ROMs and they would come with it would be like a little Aladdin's cave of stuff. It kind of sounds a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Was there anything else that you wanted to draw attention to in terms of the version 10 and the differences between version 9 and version 10? We've obviously talked about most of the big things, I think. Was there anything else particularly? You've got that list of 20 kind of minor updates there.
I can mention a few quickly that, again, are little things, but just an indication of the kind of level of detail we're looking at. If you download documents from Gutenberg or from NLS WebBraille, the naming conventions for the files that you got on your system were pretty obscure because they followed the naming conventions of those sites. And we've changed that. We now rename those documents based on the title of the books rather than based on their naming conventions, which makes it a whole lot easier to find them afterwards. We have...
Yeah, because a lot of those titles have numbers and things, don't they, to do with the revision and all sorts of, you know, initials and things that are words that are concatenated and things like that. So you're taking the title out of the file itself.
Yeah, they seem to be designed for file systems that are still in the 8.3 days for some reason. So they do all sorts of things to shorten the file name. And we avoid that by renaming them ourselves. Let's see, document recovery after a power failure. We've always had the ability to recover a document that you lose, and basically when you bring up the system, it would ask if you want to restore. It would indicate that there were files that you might lose otherwise and would have you press a button to restore them. But it's really easy when you start CurseFlow 1000 to not pay attention to the first message and lose that. So now when you do that, we will place the working versions of those files in a folder. And that folder is under our document home, and it's called temporary/orphans. And in the orphans folder, if you change your mind and really want to look for lost documents, you can go find them in there.
What you're saying is, after the fact, you could go in there and perhaps scan another book in the interim, and then when you've got a free moment, you can go and check, you know, if there are any orphaned documents there that perhaps you might want to recover.
Yes, exactly. Let's see. So there's all sorts of little things. If you're working in the ranked spelling or poorly recognized pages dialog, you can now press escape and get back to the main document. It will remember what you were working on, and if you hit escape again, you'll be back in the poorly recognized pages dialog or the ranked spelling dialog. So you can go bounce back and forth, and those dialogs tend to be used a lot in what we tend to call production editing, where you're trying to clean up a document for as quickly as possible for future use. So that is there just to make that easier to work.
Okay.
I think that pretty much is much of what I would say. As usual, releases are designed largely on the basis of feedback that we get from customers. And people can always contact me or use the CurseFlow 1000 listserv in order to provide ideas.
Okay.
And there's a healthy discussion right now going on in the 1000 list about several possible new features, any one of which I would have liked to have in version 10 but didn't think of.
So this is version 10.0, and it's been out for a little while. Can you just talk us through the release schedule, and is this available now in all markets, or are you just starting to roll this out?
It's rolling out. It's certainly available now domestically. It is the version that we are shipping right now, and we're shipping both. You know, there's three kinds of shipments. There's people who are buying the product for the first time, who are buying the full product. There are upgrades from earlier releases where people are calling us and upgrading. And then there are automatic upgrades. If you've bought the full product within the past year, you automatically get an upgrade. And we are doing all three of those types of shipments right now. It will take us undoubtedly a few more weeks to get through the backlog. But if people order the product today, that is the product that they're getting. I would think that would also be true in Britain, although I don't know if they have them on hand yet. I believe in places like Britain, they have to replace their current inventory, and it sometimes takes a while for that to occur.
Okay. And the upgrades, they come on CD, essentially. You don't have any internet updater at this stage?
No. And in fact, it annoys me, but we don't even have the ability to order the upgrade on the internet. You do end up having to call a dealer or call us. And the reason for that is, you know, stupidity on our part, I would say, is the real answer.
Maybe something for the future.
I hope it's something that we get around to, but it's also something that's kind of, I have to say, that I've tried to have us get around to for some time, and it's just the kind of, it just ends up being difficult for us to get our website and web store site designed in such a manner that we can verify that people are our customers to begin with.
Okay, and for somebody who perhaps hasn't updated in a while, and perhaps they have the, you know, an older version, version 8 or something, then do they have to upgrade through 9, or can they purchase a single upgrade to 10?
They can purchase a single upgrade to 10. We don't force people to go through obsolete releases, and we don't force them to upgrade when we make a new release. It's the same price. We're going from version 1 or version 4 or 5 or 7, doesn't really matter.
Okay.
And that price in the United States, and I don't have prices worldwide, but in the U.S. is $95, and I think there's also a shipping charge with that.
This is a major update for version 10. Generally, the interim releases, you know, 10.1, for example, that will be a free update, presumably. But this is a major update from version 9, and that's at $95 US.
That's correct. The only people for whom this is free are people who bought the full product within the last year. So anyone who bought version 9 as a full product, for example, would get this for free.
Okay. And people should contact their dealers.
Yes, they should.
Okay, and let's just get some contact details then. You indicated that you certainly welcome feedback from customers, and that there are some healthy discussions going on the K1000 mailing list. So how do people get in contact?
Well, my email address is Steve, S-T-E-V-E, at kesi.com. And that's a shorter domain name than the other one, which you could also use, which is kurzweiledu.com. And I encourage people to use KESI because it's easier to remember and easier to type. But both will work. You can get to the listserv. The listserv is k1000 at kurzweiledu.com. But to get to that listserv, you're best off using our website if you are not a member of it already, to become a member of it. That website is kesi.com or kurzweiledu.com. Hopefully they both work. And if I go to the support section of that site, there is a tab for listservs, and there's a sign-up link. So one can get to the K1000 or the K3000 listserv in that manner and sign up for those. Our phone number in the United States or Canada is 800-894-5374. That's the number for us in general and for sales. For support, it's 888-995-9905.
Okay, can you just give us those numbers again? People often ask me, oh, he said the number and I didn't catch it. So if you just give us the numbers one more time, that would be great.
Again, this is domestic or U.S. or North America. 800-894-5374.
And that's sales, is it?
That's sales and customer service. For technical support, it's 888-995-9905. And then for international callers, our number is 781-276-0618. And, of course, the country code is 1.
Okay. And you guys, of course, on Eastern time, so people should call during the business day Eastern time.
We are, although technical support hours run from 10 a.m. Eastern time to 10 a.m. in the evening Eastern time. So
10 p.m. in the evening.
Hours. 10 p.m., yes.
Yeah.
So that's 12 hours of coverage.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Stephen Baum. We really appreciate you taking time out to talk to Main Menu. Was there anything that we didn't touch on that you wanted to mention?
No, I think we did fine.
Excellent.
Thank you Steve, very much for the opportunity.
No problem. Stephen Baum from Kurzweil Educational Systems. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That pretty much wraps it up for this week's main menu. Thanks very much to Stephen Baum for giving up his time to speak with Main Menu. And don't forget, of course, ACB Radio's Main Menu is your show. We would certainly welcome your input. And if you have an idea for an item you would like to hear on Main Menu, or even better, if you have an idea for an item you would like to produce for Main Menu, and we can certainly provide technical support with that, then do get in touch. The email address to write to is mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. And on behalf of all the Main Menu team, thanks very much for listening. This is Dave Williams, and until next time, bye for now.